So this interview is being conducted on behalf of the Western Australian branch of the Australian Garden History Society. It is an interview with Carol Mansfield at her home in Mount Claremont, Perth, Western Australia, on Wednesday the 29th of July 2020, in the presence of John Visca, who will contribute to the interview. The interviewer is Patsy Vizenz. Okay. So Carol, thank you. Thank you very much for contributing to the National Oral History and for your time today.
My pleasure.
Let's start with the biographical information. So your full name and your date of birth.
Okay. My full name is Carol Mansfield and I was born on the 10th of September 1935 in the UK in a place called Teddington. Just outside London.
Is that south?
South
yes. Of London,
yes.
Yeah. The name of your parents?
My mother's name was Winifred. Her maiden name was Rugen, R-U-G-E-N. My father's name was Walter Turner. So that was my name, Turner.
So your maiden name was Turner, yes. And what did Walter do?
My father.
What did your father do? What was he employed as?
He did a variety of things. During the war, we moved north to Lancashire, where he was involved in some seed testing to do with food production during the war, Second World War. And my mother had trained as a shorthand typist, and she was always very keen on plants. She'd studied botany, and so she was a great help to me.
So would you describe that you were, that gardening had an appeal, or that gardening was part of your upbringing?
Yes, I think it was part of my upbringing. We moved from Kent just before the end of the war, and we had a lovely garden there, which my father grew a lot of fruit and vegetables. And then we moved, that's right. But we had a bigger flower garden there, which my mother attended to.
Mm.
And I was about 10, and I remember my father giving me a little plot and saying, "That's for you." And I remember growing radish and nasturtiums, and I remember it particularly because we all had two-story houses, and there was a two-story house overlooking my little patch, and I was looking at it one morning, as all gardeners do, and the window of the next door lady's house opened, and she said, "You looked at that yesterday." And I was so embarrassed. I never forgotten it.
So was your father really, he was supportive, but did he give you clues? Did you have sort of training sessions? How did you know how to garden?
I think by osmosis, really. I just, you know, it was infused into me by watching and helping my parents.
Mm. So he was doing wheat testing?
He was in the north.
Yes.
But when we moved down to Kent, where I had my first garden, he was actually running the village store.
Yeah. So you mentioned primary school. Where did you do your schooling?
Up until I was about 10, we were in Lancashire during the war, and the war had nearly finished when we moved down to Kent, where I had my first little plot, and we stayed there. I can't remember when we moved. We moved to a smaller house in Kent, and it must have been after I started nursing, which would be about 1956, I think.
So you did your primary and secondary schooling and then straight into nursing?
Yes, yes.
Had you always wanted to be a nurse?
For some extraordinary reason, yes.
How long is the training for a general nurse, was it?
Well, the formal training's 3 years, or was 3 years, and you get your certificate after 3 years. Mm. But because I trained at a prestigious London hospital, you don't get your hospital badge, which is very valuable, until you've done an extra year. So we're quite snobbish about it. We need to have our hospital badge.
Do you want to name that institution?
Oh, yes, certainly. The place I trained was Guy's Hospital.
Yes.
In the East End. Mm. So we had a lot of East End Cockneys as patients. And we used to say, Guy's Hospital to get married, St. Thomas's Hospital to be a lady, and Westminster Hospital to be a nurse.
So you got married?
So I got married. I did. To a doctor.
So this is 1950.
Yes, I finished my training in 58.
Mm. When we're working and we're busy, gardening is probably a secondary thing, but was gardening with you all the way through training and then working?
No, I think it was in the background. Mm. Because it was pretty full on. Mm. And we had to live in the nurses' quarters in London. So there was no opportunity to garden.
One thing I was going to ask was, did you have a favourite plant when you did have your plot?
No. Well, nasturtiums I've always liked. But my mother and father grew the scented tobacco plant, the Nicotiana. So I was brought up being very aware of that and its perfume. Mm.
There's quite a strong sense, isn't it?
Yes.
The smell.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so you met your husband
at the hospital.
Was that rather quick?
Yes, it was quite quick. And after he graduated, he went into general practice and we bought a house in Surrey. We were married quite quickly in 58, bought a house in Surrey because he obtained a job as a junior general practice.
What actually drove you to come to Australia?
Well, my husband did about 3 or 4 years general practice, and at that time the British health system was going through the doldrums and there was no encouragement for professional development or anything. And he came home more than once and said, I can't do this for the rest of my life. There must be more. So he went back into hospital, did a postgraduate degree in medicine, where he met a Perth doctor also doing a postgraduate degree. His happened to be in surgery. And we got to know John from Perth because he didn't know anybody else in the UK. So, and his family was with him. And he had 2 or 3 daughters. We had 2 daughters, much the same age. So we got to know John quite well. And when my husband decided that he needed to move somewhere, we decided to come to Perth because we knew John came from Perth.
Okay, one thing I haven't done is ask your husband's name.
Frank. Simply Frank.
Yeah. Mansfield.
Yeah.
And John's name?
Hanrahan. He may still be alive. We kept in touch for a long time.
So when, what year did you come to Australia, to Perth?
1965, we came by sea. And I've omitted a period. I'm just trying to think when it happened. Must have been after he graduated. And before he went into general practice, he had to do 2 years military service because that was in the days when all young men had to do 2 years military service by law, and you could either do it before you graduated or after, and he opted to do it after. So in fact I missed out 2 years after he graduated and remarried in 58. He almost immediately joined the army and was posted to Aden in Saudi Arabia, where he was for 2 years.
Without you?
Without me, but I was able to get a job as sanatorium sister at a boys' public school in Essex called Felstead, and save enough money for my voyage out. So I sailed out and spent the last 6 months with him in Aden, where I got a job as sister in charge of an Arab women's ward.
That's fantastic.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Yes.
No gardens there?
No. My husband found some interesting plants when he went up country, as they called it, which he often did. And he'd find some interesting plants, but the only thing I remember were oleanders.
Yeah.
Because it never rained, ever. So, sorry, that's the sort of...
So that's
backward jump.
Well, that's okay. So you're around about 1960, and he comes back.
That's right. Yes.
Back to Surrey.
Back to Surrey, and then thereafter, it's what I said before.
Yes, John Hanrahan.
We came to Perth in 1965.
Okay. So did Frank have a job to go to?
Yes, that's why we came to Collie. We had 12 months in Collie because one of the GPs was leaving and wanted a replacement. And I think he advertised in the medical journal. And my husband answered and said he'd take the job. So we were only 12 months in Collie. But that was where I came to know the wildflowers.
And you certainly would have rain there.
We certainly did, and frost, and heat.
Mm.
So it was baptism by fire.
Mm.
But matter of fact, I didn't want to live in Collie the rest of my life, but it was a wonderful opportunity to get to know the bush. And looking back on it, you know, I did the stupidest things. My husband went to work and left me with the car and two young children aged 3 and 5. And I just take off and drive through the bush. I didn't have a map or anything.
Did you have a road?
Tracks, yes. But only gravel tracks. See, silly things you do when you're young and naive. But I never got lost.
But you would have no idea of the space and size of the bush.
No. But I fell in love with the bush, I fell in love with the wildflowers, I couldn't get over them, especially the orchids. And my daughter, even now, because she was 5 at the time, even now, remembers when I found some boronia growing. I remember, Mum, I remember how excited you were, and I remember the perfume. So, that was Collie. We only stayed 12 months. Because we didn't particularly, looking ahead, think there was opportunities for the girls' education. So a job came up in Bunbury. We moved there in 67 and spent the next 9 years there in general practice.
This is all sand dune country, not so much Collie, but Bunbury.
Yes.
So you came face to face with the issues of gardening in a very limey, sandy soil.
Yes. Yes.
Did you have assistance? How did you come to terms with it? You know, like growing things. Did you join any groups or something in Bunbury?
Not gardening groups, no. Made a lot of friends, but I don't think any of them were actual gardeners. There were one or two that were interested in the wildflowers.
Mm.
But I think with gardening, I just had to feel my way.
Mm.
And I did a lot of reading. We spent, both of us, when my husband had some free time, we spent quite a lot of time driving south to places like Nanup and Balingup, which were developed like they are now.
Mm. Mm. Do you enjoy that period of time?
Yes, very much, yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes, because it was the time when the ilmenite factory was just starting south of Bunbury, and they were bringing out a lot of British engineers and even a lawyer and so on. So there were quite a lot of people about our age, with our age children, all arriving at the same time, without families.
Okay. So Bunbury and then up to Perth?
Yes. Yes, my husband, while we were in Bunbury, became very interested in professional development and community medicine in general practice from a more scholarly point of view. So he started going up to meetings in the city from Bunbury, and the meetings became more and more, and he got more and more involved with the University at WA, so that it must have been about 75. We moved up to the city so that my husband could attend at UWA, and he and another GP were asked to form the inaugural branch of the what was known as the Family Medicine Program, which was a program designed to train GPs, or to train young graduates who wanted to go into general practice, and give them some help. Because prior to that, if they wanted to go into general practice, after they graduated, they were just thrown to the wolves, really. Had to learn on the job. So this program was established first in the eastern states, and then my husband and another doctor called Hugh Cook were invited to start the program in Western Australia. So he carried on doing a little part-time general practice in the hills in Kalamunda, which is where we moved to, and the rest of his time was in the city.
I'm assuming because of the children that you didn't work?
No, I didn't work. I volunteered at St. Bridget's College in the library. I think we're talking about the mid-70s, late-70s. And I enjoyed it so much I went off to Secondary Teachers College, which is now part of UWA, isn't it? And did a 2-year diploma in library studies. And then went back to St. Bridget's to run the high school library. And I looked around at the other staff who'd been to uni and graduated. And I must have been in my 40s. And I thought, well, if you can go to uni, so can I. So thanks to Mr. Whitlam, it didn't cost me anything to go to UWA and I graduated in English with a strong component in history, West Australian history. And all the while I was gardening, and was the Garden History Society extant by then?
1988 we formed.
Right. Well, that was the year that we moved from our first Hills home to our second most important Hills home.
So Kalamunda was the first?
Yes.
And was it a substantial garden that you had there?
Yes, it was. It was in Carmel. It's an old Federation homestead with a large garden all the way around it, which had only been cultivated minimally, but it had, I think, probably been used as part of the orchard which surrounded it. So most of the soil had been tilled over the years.
By that time, had you become very confident, or you understood growing conditions?
Yes, I think I had become quite confident and did a lot of reading, and with John's encouragement did a lot more.
So when did you meet John Lithgow?
I think it must have been through Mary Hargraves.
That's correct.
But how I got onto Mary Hargraves, I don't know. I'm wondering if there was an article in the paper about her garden. Do you think so?
Can I add something here?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Please do.
I think it was through Frank.
Was it?
Mary went to Frank.
Oh.
And she's told me a general discussion about gardening, and Frank said, oh, my wife's interested in gardening.
Oh.
And so that's how it happened.
Yes.
And I'd already known Mary.
Yeah.
Going back to probably the early mid-1970s.
Right.
And that's how it turned, that's how it came about.
Yes.
And you rang me one day. Mary Hargraves had given my name to you, and that's when Falls Farm was starting to.
Oh, right.
So you're looking for someone to help with some gardening advice at Falls Farm.
Yes, yes.
All right, we've leapt a bit. So you moved from Carmel to another Hills home. So what was the second?
No, Carmel was the most important one.
Yeah.
Ah.
When we first came up in 84, I think, well, we built a house in Edward Road where we had 5 acres.
And that's where I first met you?
Yes.
When you were in Edwards Road.
That's right. And it was an old orchard property which had been excised. 5 acres had been excised. And we built there, and it was a super block because the front of it was bush, and then we put the house at the end of the bush and the top of the paddocks. So it was bush, house, paddocks, and we were surrounded by bush, and the children had horses, and I used to walk through the bush frequently. I would have been working at St. Bridget's then, probably voluntarily, but I had plenty of time to walk through the bush and get to know it a bit better. Yeah. And also cut my teeth on gardening in the hills at Edward Road. So that would be where I met you and Mary. But I do remember, John, you must have told me Mary lived at Wirra Willa, because I do remember we were driving past and I said to my husband, oh, that's Wirra Willa, that must be where Mary lives. So we stopped the car, and with great impertinence, I knocked on the door and said, oh, hello, I'm Carol Mansfield. Can I look round your garden, please? And so it went on.
Did she escort you?
Yes.
Must have been extraordinary to see the garden.
But there were hardly any gardens of any consequence, were there?
No, no.
That's why hers was quite special.
Why was it special?
Because I thought, well, if she can grow those sorts of things, so can I. No, obviously, the people I'd met up until then didn't know much about gardening, like the people from Bunbury. So Mary was the first real gardener, and John that I'd met, I think.
What was in her garden?
Well, I remember the shrubs mainly, some unusual shrubs. I mean, there would have been azaleas and camellias, and there may have been other unusual things.
Holmskiolda. Remember the Holmskiolda?
No.
The Chinaman's little hat thing? That was a very rare plant she always talked about.
Oh, right. Yes. No, I can just remember it being lovely.
Mm-hmm. So, exotics.
Yes.
And deciduous trees.
Yes. Yes.
How did that become a firm friendship?
Yes, it did, yes, 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 yes.
The way you described your house with the bush and the house and then the garden,
yes.
Was there a threat of fire at those in the 1980s?
Yes, there was, yes, there was, yes.
Did you have any...
It came perilously close, but not close enough. It was about 200 or 300 meters away one night. But that was the only occasion.
Mm. So you kind of, like in the development of Edwards Row House, you introduced new plants and things to...
Yes, I think that was where I really started growing cool kind of plants. Yes, the Edward Road Garden was where I first realised the potential of gardening in the hills with the cooler climate and the better soil. Mm. Yes, aided by Mary and John's advice.
You mentioned Falls Farm. Do you want to elaborate on that?
Yes, Pauline may have mentioned it, I don't know, but I can't remember the date. But the children always remind me that we went to church on Christmas morning, and after church we'd chat, and Pauline Tonkin was there, and she approached us and said, "Oh, hello, I'm Pauline, etc., etc. We're hoping to restore this old cottage. Would you like to help?" And we looked at each other and said, "Yes, yes, we'd love to." So my husband got quite involved in the building side of things, and I seemed to gravitate, as one does, as a gardener, to the garden.
Were you living close to the farm itself?
Yes, it was only about a 5-minute drive from the farm to Edward Road. Edward Road was just off the Wellspool Road, so it was quite close.
Mm-hmm. I understand that John was involved in the Falls Farm restoration. Was that before or after you had met him?
That would be after, I think, John. Yes. Yes. And I think that by that time we'd more or less decided on a vague shape of the garden, and decided in principle to fill it with old roses rather than modern ones. And John came to the rescue with his students to do the paving. And I'm quite sure he would advise us about the good garden as well.
So were you involved with Heritage Roses at that time?
I think I must have been. But again, I don't remember how, unless it was through Mary. I did volunteer later, after I graduated, I did volunteer to help in Kalamunda Public Library. And that led to my involvement with Kalamunda Historical Society, which is a whole other area.
Mm. But it's about history and...
It's about history. Yeah. And I did introduce some old roses to Hister Village, because I felt that was appropriate. Mm.
So your own reading and joining others who are gardening groups or...
Yes. And I guess joining the Garden History Society was very instrumental in increasing my knowledge of what was appropriate to the various conditions. I know I went over to several of the conferences, and they were very enlightening and very enjoyable.
Were you part of the first branch that was formed in Western Australia?
I think so.
On the committee?
Yeah.
Yes?
Yeah. I can't remember. Yeah. It's dreadful, isn't it?
The original committee member.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Well, you must have been involved in the garden visits.
Yes.
Visits to gardens.
Yes, I was, yes. Yes, I do remember being on the inaugural selection committee for the Open Garden Scheme. I do remember that.
Did you have your own garden open for the public?
But we moved to Carmel from Edward Road about 1988. So I suppose before I moved to Carmel, I was starting to learn about gardening in the hills and the potential. So we decided to leave Edward Road when the children had grown up and left pursuing their own lives.
Yes.
And it didn't make sense to keep the 5 acres with the horses. It was just not sensible. But it took us a long time to find the right place, because I was determined that I was going to find the right house with the potential for the right garden. And as soon as we walked in the driveway of the 1988 house in Union Road, Carmel, I turned and said to my husband, "This is it."
Why was that? What was it?
Because the house was beautiful to look at from the outside. Typical Australian Federation brick house. And the garden went all the way around the house. And it was only minimally worked, but enough I could see the potential. So we got it and got to work. Yes, he did a lot.
He must have enjoyed gardening as well.
He did, yes, yes. When we bought the property, there was a swimming pool right in front of the front steps. Did you ever see that?
Yeah.
Yes, there was this beautiful Federation house with steps up to the front veranda, and the swimming pool right there at the bottom of the steps. So you had to go all the way around the swimming pool to get to the beautiful veranda. So we had the top meter or so of the pool jackhammered away, and all the debris put in the bottom of the pool, having made holes first so it drained, and then filled it all with soil. My husband used to call it the biggest flower pot in Western Australia. So we were able to make a garden there. It had very good drainage.
I'm really interested in the difference of growing in the hills to the plains. So what was it that you could grow there?
Almost everything, really. I didn't, much as I loved the bush, I didn't actually plant many natives. I planted exotics because it's my first opportunity to do so, I think. Mm-hmm. Having left the UK in 65, I wasn't really able to grow exotics successfully until we moved to Carmel in 1988. So I did put in camellias and azaleas and primroses, primulas and hellebores and shrubs, Garrya elliptica I remember in particular, and the witch hazel, I've forgotten its Latin name, botanical name, things like that.
And what about the cyclamen and the spinney?
Oh yes, I was able to get those established, yeah. Wasn't I? They began to seed themselves in what we call the spinney, because the previous owners had planted a few deciduous trees, which were quite young when we moved in, and I was able to thin them out so we had enough cover but also enough light. And then of course on the sunny side of the house I was able to grow roses, and in the front I was able to grow. And my husband Frank was very interested in the old roses, so between the two of us we chose to plant old roses in the summit areas. And so we finished up with a sort of formal garden in the front and then a woodland garden down the side, moving around the house to a veggie garden overlooked by an ancient mulberry tree, which was lovely, and then to the lawn area and flower beds and a grassed area which had been a tennis court, but we turned it into a croquet lawn. So you could move all round. And in front, the turning circle, we made a turning circle in which I planted rugosa roses and a brown cover. Probably overdid it. I found a photograph and the plants everywhere.
And that was open to the public?
Then we opened to the public. Possibly in 2000. I think I must have been there a couple of years before we opened.
Going back to the Garden History Society, you went on conferences.
Yes, I did.
Can you remember any in particular?
Yes, I remember going to the Melbourne one, and Iris Leggett I met from Darlington, and she was about the only, apart from Mary Hargraves, was about the only local gardener I knew at the time. And Iris and Bob had a lovely garden in Darlington, and I got to know Iris very well. So she and I went to Melbourne together. John was there, of course. And then there was one in New Zealand, and that might have been Heritage Roses.
It was, yeah.
There was one in South Australia. I went to that one. I did go to several.
Yeah. You did do a presentation about the garden in Victoria when you went to...
Did I?
Yeah.
Yes.
You gave us a little talk, and it was Joan Law Smith's garden, Bolabek.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. 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 My memory's impaired because I had treatment for anxiety, and it's taken patches of my memory away. But when my memory is jogged, then it comes back.
That's great. So Carol gave a talk on not her garden.
This was in our early days.
Yes.
And it was like, as a guest speaker, just one of our meetings, early function.
Mm.
and she had slides, and just gave a talk about what they'd seen at the
presenting
conference.
Yeah. Okay. Did you participate with the journal? You know, the AGHS
yes,
journal?
Yes, I did. And unfortunately, I meant to get the copies that I've retained, I meant to get them from my daughter.
Mm.
But I haven't, unfortunately. But I did, I think, well, I do remember writing the first paper quite early on in the piece. And that was stimulated because up the road from our house in Carmel, there was an elderly lady living, and it transpired that she was the granddaughter of Benjamin Mason, who was the first person to start a timber mill in our area. And so I got to know her because I discovered who she was and what a source of local knowledge she was. And her simple cottage garden made me think about early cottage gardens in Western Australia, what they may have been like. And then I'd also somehow or other got to know a much smarter garden in Kalamunda itself, which had been made by a real estate agent who had imported a lot of plants from overseas and the eastern states. And so his was a very formal garden, and some examples of garden ornamentation.
Was that Mr. Thorogood's garden?
Yes, that was Mr. Thorogood on Trail End Road. And he was much travelled, and he imported quite a lot of exotic shrubs from overseas.
So was it easy to import?
Yes, it was then.
Did he have to use a go-between, like a nursery, to do the importing, or
I think he bought them back himself.
How did you get your supplies of exotic shrubs?
I imported exotic bulbs. I may have imported some exotic shrubs. I probably did. But a bit further on in time, a charming lady called Margaret Clemmer opened a nursery in Forestfield, and she imported a lot of exotic shrubs and propagated a lot of exotic shrubs. So further on, I was able to top up what I had in her nursery. But getting back to the Garden History Society, the first article I wrote was the contrast between the little cottage garden up the road from me and Mr. Thorogood's very formal, probably expensively laid out garden. So I pointed to the differences. And also I think I had become aware of people saying, there's no garden history in Western Australia. There's nothing worth writing about. So I think I set out to prove them wrong.
And you did.
And then I know I did one about Edgar Dell.
Yes.
Because I met his wife. Yes, he was an eccentric. But I met his wife through the Historical Society. And I remember plucking up my courage and asking him if he'd talk to me, which he did, because he'd met my husband professionally. So I had a start, yes. He didn't regard me with suspicion, which I think he regarded most people.
Edgar Dell.
Edgar Dell, yes. and he was a very talented artist.
Yeah, botanical, fabulous.
And Dr. Gardner used Ed Bedell's paintings to illustrate his book, The Wildflowers of Western Australia, which I think my daughter's got a copy of, and I know John has, and my copy's gone to my daughter. But having interviewed him, and I could see how talented he was, I wrote an article about him and his ability to portray the wildflowers of Western Australia. Mm. He trained in London as a young man, but for some reason he was very eccentric, and for some reason when he came to Western Australia he stopped painting professionally, although he obviously did do some for Dr. Gardner. But other than that, when I met him, he refused to do any more for some reason. I can't remember what the other articles were about. Do you remember, John?
Hamel Nursery.
Oh, yes.
And you met Don Ross.
I went down there and met Don Ross, yes.
And you did Charles Harper?
At Woodbridge.
Woodbridge.
Yes, the reason I did him was because he employed Tom Price as his gardener at Woodbridge, and it transpired that Tom Price had started the most successful orchard in the Kalamunda district, and he was only known as an orchardist. People didn't realise he was trained at Kew Gardens and knew his plants. So when he retired from his orchard in about 70 something, he retired from his orchard and built the house called Pasadena on the Kalamunda Road. It's still there. And he called it Pasadena because he went to California to study fruit growing and fell in love with Pasadena. So he thought he'd call his new house Pasadena. And after he left Harper's Nursery, as I said, he started the orchard. And then when he retired, he built Pasadena. And we had a walk round, didn't we, looking at the exotics that he planted and imported.
And at our first conference, on the optional garden viewing day, we took people up to Pasadena, as going up to the Hills Gardens in 1998.
Right, yes. Yes. It was quite overgrown, I think. And it must be even more overgrown now.
Didn't you do one on the Lorings? The bulb up there in...
Loring.
Yes. Mary Parton and bulbs.
Yes, that's right, yes. Yes, because of the Historical Society, which I got really involved with, deeply involved, I met so many local interesting people. And one of them was the Palmateer family, who were early settlers in Bickley, and I met the old lady, Audrey Murley. That was her married name, but she had been a Palmateer, and Palmateers locally were very well known for taking up a large area of land in Bickley and building a beautiful Federation house like ours. And she, the lady I talked to, was called Audrey. She was in her 80s at the time, and she recalled her mother, who was called Lucy. Her mother had been born and brought up in South Australia, So when she, for some reason, came to Western Australia and married into the Parmentier family, she brought quite a lot of unusual bulbs with her from South Australia, and she was able to import unusual plants from South Australia because she was familiar with them, having lived there.
So no border control?
No, nothing like that. So Audrey, Lucy's daughter, was very generous to me. She gave me some quite unusual bulbs. She gave me some different narcissi. She might have given me the Virginia. I'm really not sure. Yes, because John dug the Virginia up from an old nursery, didn't you? Yes. She may have given me the Eucharis, possibly.
Yes.
And the Eucomis, possibly. But certainly, and then Lucy's daughter was the one from South Australia. Her daughter was Audrey, the old lady who gave me the bulbs. And Audrey's daughter married a Loring, and she and her husband carried on growing bulbs, and in fact grew them commercially. So they finished up with a bulb farm, and I think that's probably what I wrote about, didn't I?
Yeah.
And because it had an interesting historic background.
Mm-hmm. And it was local for you?
And it was local, yes.
You've contributed a lot.
Yes, I think I probably did.
So, I know John's been involved since 1988. When did you cease relationships with the Garden History Society?
When did I cease?
Yes. Are you still a member?
I still get the journal, and I still got an interest. But after my husband died, I fell in a hole and had to give up a lot of my activities. The worst thing being my psychiatrist doctor said I mustn't drive because of the medication I was on. So that stopped me being a free agent. I couldn't drive to see John whenever I felt like it. So that was a two-edged sword. The treatment helped me, but by losing my independence, I was unable to keep up with my gardening colleagues quite. So but I was still able to go to the local historical society because I could walk.
When did he die?
2014, which is 6 years ago.
Not that long. Yeah. Right, well, it seems that you're a researcher, a plants woman, a historian.
A collector. Was a collector. Beautiful collection of porcelain.
Yes.
Your baskets.
Yes. And the thing I love most that I had in the garden, and after my husband died, I moved to Gooseberry Hill, to Landor Road, which is a bush block sloping. But we had a lot of shade. We had virtually no soil. It was laterite. But that's when I was able to plant natives. Well, it was the only sensible thing to plant was natives. But I managed to make a little protected corner, and because it was a smaller garden, I had more time to attend to detail. And I fell in love with auriculas, and I've got some photos, not here, that my daughter has, of all the beautiful auriculas I was able to grow, some of which I grew from seed. I could hardly believe it now.
So a nursery woman as well. Nursery woman.
Yes, do you remember the Auriculars? Yes.
Oh, beautiful.
John does, yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. And I must have started...
You had the little gold-laced edged Auriculars.
Yes, little gold-edged Primulars.
Primulars, sorry.
And then I had the Auriculars as well. And I don't know where I got the first ones from.
Bridgetown. We had a weekend in Bridgetown.
Oh.
And there was a little nursery
there. That's right. There was a little nursery there. Yes. You see, John's jogging my memory.
Well, he would know every nursery.
I bet. Mm. Yes. I probably started with one or two plants. And then I studied the literature carefully. As you can see from my library, it's nearly all about plant history and plant hunting.
Mm.
I was able to study the history of the plants and thereby elucidate what conditions they liked and try and mimic those conditions, particularly with the Auriculars. But I've retained my interest in the Garden History Society, and if I were able to go to a meeting, I would.
The journal, you say that you still get the journal. Do you find it stimulating?
Yes, I do, yes, yes, yes. And I, more and more, I can see it leaning towards conservation and towards parkland as well as gardens, which is important, especially now with our increased population and these awful multi-storey units going up. It's terribly important to try and retain as much natural bush and parkland as we can.
It might be fitting to do a follow-up article now where you've got the original cottage garden, the cultivated, more exotic sort of layout, to now a much, much smaller domestic garden.
Yes.
There's an evolution is happening.
Yes, yes.
When you talk about the Carmel home, are you talking about Fawkes House?
Yes.
Did you name it Fawkes House?
We did, but we never put the name on the gate. But in our minds, it was Fawkes House. But the people who bought it turned it into a bed and breakfast and gave it the official name, Fawkes House, and which was good for trading, I expect.
What does that refer to?
The family who built the house about 1919. I learned from a local, and they were Plymouth Brethren, and he had a car, I was told, and drove every Sunday down to Vic Park to the Plymouth Brethren meetings. But I was always surprised, and still am, that a member of the Plymouth Brethren should have built such an outstanding house, because he was indulging in conspicuous consumption, which I thought the Brethren were not supposed to do. So that appealed to me, that quirky side of it.
Lovely. Is there anything else you would like to ask Carol, John?
What about the bird life at Carmel? The five-tailed finches?
Yes, I'd forgotten those until I looked back on my diaries. And at some stage, I must have gone through my old diaries and written out a sheet of significant events and situations. And it was only a few days ago, to my surprise, that I found that Frank had written that he was thrilled to see the firetail finches in the vicinity. Yes.
And the white form of the Algerian iris that you told me you got from a little old lady in Bunbury, an You've still got it here in your little courtyard garden.
Yes, I've been carrying it around with me, haven't I?
Yes. And I'm going to get a bit to try and revive my garden also.
It must have been the old lady, Palmateer, I think, from Bickley.
I had a feeling you said you got it from someone in Bunbury. I could be wrong. I may be wrong there, it could have been something else.
Mm. I don't think it was fun.
Okay.
No.
Just one thing, remember when you got to Carmel, you started looking around and what you called the rose in the ditch?
Oh yes, that was opposite, that was in Forest Field. The young lady called Margaret Clemmer, who started an unusual plant nursery in Forest Field, it had transpired that her nursery was opposite the site of the original Forest Field post office and store, now long gone. But in the ditch was this rose that was suckering all over the place. So I pulled up a couple of suckers and put one at History Village, that was the Historical Society Centre in Kalamunda. And I must have planted one at Gooseberry Hill, though I don't know what happened to it. But I did explain to the people at History Village that that was significant because it was on the site of Anderson's original store. I have a nasty feeling that they may have removed it since I left working in the garden.
And was it a tea rose or one of the more rambling roses?
No, it wasn't a tea rose. It was more like, they used to call it a cabbage rose, didn't they?
Yeah.
The old people.
Yeah.
I think it's like one I probably saw growing wild in Turkey or China.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, because of my interest in plants, which was fed by the Garden History Society, very much my history of plants was fed by them. While my husband was still well, we chose to go on a wildflower tour through Turkey to see the wildflowers growing as they should be growing, as nature intended them, and to China. We went down the Yangtze River, but it wasn't one of these smart cruises, it was just a small boat which stopped every day, and we were able to get out and climb through the mountain tracks and see the wild roses and the wild camellias, or the wild philadelphus viburnums, all growing everywhere. Oh, it's unreal.
Was that an organised tour, or did you just do
it
that?
It was an organised tour.
Okay.
And I realised, having gone back on some of my information, it was an English tour. And we had to fly to Heathrow to pick it up. And the other members of the tour were British, and thought we were quite crazy, going all the way to London, go on a tour to China.
Also, can I just add something? What about, you know, you're collecting, not collecting so much, but finding old gardening books and things.
Yes.
That you had a little bit of a little commercial venture or such.
Yes, I collected a lot of old gardening books in my travels. Many of which I sold, but some I kept. Yes. So I did a lot of reading on the plant hunters, which is why they went to China and Turkey to see the sort of situation that the early plant hunters have seen. And although there's much I've forgotten, I do remember at one point we had to take, this is China, we had to take a chairlift to get to the higher mountain area. And as we got out of the chairlift and I looked at these mountains, and I thought I was walking into a Japanese painting because it was China, not Japan. But the natural bonsais were there growing out of the mountains, and it took my breath away. It was so beautiful. I remember that.
Thank you, Carol. Thank you very much for your time. That's lovely.